Thank you, Andrew. Now, we realise there's a lot of information there, so thank you for listening to that. And it's ambitious for Creative Scotland, but it's also ambitious for Scotland as a whole. We want to be ideas-led. We want to hear your comments and questions, and we're hoping that you've got lots of comments and questions. So we thought the best way to do this is if I just chair some questions. So if you have a question you'd like to ask, please raise your hand or catch my eye. Please, when I ask you, say where you are, who you are and where you're from. And then between us, we'll take those questions and answer them as best we can. There will be time for networking afterwards. So if you don't get time to ask your question in this forum, I'll be around for as long as it takes afterwards to sit with you and ask any questions that you have. So who would like to kick off? David? Yes, please. If you just wait for the microphone, that's good. Thanks.
David Lockwood, Dumfries and Galway Council. Previously, we've had project funding and flexible funding and foundation funding, and that seemed to me to be a kind of stepping stone of status within different organisations. Is that something you're wishing to move away from?
Thank you.
Right. Well, we realised that probably inadvertently what we'd done by having project funds and flexible funds and then the foundation organisations, that inadvertently we'd created this kind of hierarchy. And certainly, I think that slide that Andrew put up there, Frank McConnell's slide and of Plan B, what we really have to get across is that creativity is healthy as part of an ecology. Every bit of the ecology is important. Whether you're a small organisation, a foundation organisation, or anywhere else in the ecology, we've all got to recognise that we feed each other and we share each other. And someone that perhaps in one part of the ecology will end up in another part of the ecology and continue circulating round. I think there are some places, no doubt, that need special attention that may well have had significant project funds in the past or may well have had a foundation or flexible organisation in the past and don't. And in that way, we have to take a special look at them and work how we can work with those communities to make something happen, to make their ideas happen, realise new ideas, bring new ideas from other places into the equation. And actually, that's the process we're going through at the moment in Dumfries and Galloway, and I know you're part of that, so thank you for your question there. Next question, other questions? Yes, sir.
Hi, Will Levi Marshall. I'm an artist. But I'd like to say thanks for a great talk as well. I enjoyed that a great deal. It's put a lot of my initial worries to rest, so that was great to see that. But I was wondering if you'd just clarify, you mentioned a little bit about your relationship with the executive itself, and how does that part of the Creative Scotland work in terms of your relationship with the Scottish Government? And it's all very well having the best plans in the world, but if in the next election it all changes, how does that pan out?
Well, it's been quite interesting for me because I've come across from England. I've been involved in the past in a lot of politics. You know, my last job I was working essentially for two local authorities, one Liberal, one Labour, in an independent organisation managing the marketing of their cities. I've written lottery policy for the Labour Party in England 12 years ago. But I didn't know the politics of Scotland until I got here, you know, and I'm still learning about it. But I think the role that we can play is to excite and plant ideas and to position Creative Scotland so that it can adapt. And we actually say in the plan that we've written this with gaps and with space so that if there is a change of political emphasis, you know, if a Labour administration came in and wanted to do more on youth or more on youth entrepreneurship, the plan can adapt to that. If a Liberal Democrat came in and wanted to do more on the environment, the plan can adapt to that. We've been quite careful. I've shared the plan with all political parties. I briefed three of the major parties on ideas for manifestos, so they've all had slightly different ideas, and pleasingly some of those are in. And so, you know, there's cross-party support for culture in Scotland. I mean, we're in a much better place than in England, where there's been 30% cuts. And I sat on a panel with everyone. There was the minister, there was Conservatives, there was Lib Dem, there was Labour, at a BBC question type thing, and they were almost competing with each other as to who was the most supportive of Creative Scotland. So it's a great place to be. We mustn't become complacent on that. We've got a lot of work to do, kind of post an election, to make sure that the work we're doing is embedded and owned. And there will be politicking going on at the moment, around election time. We've got to stay out of that publicly. But politicians like positive press cuttings. Positive press cuttings end up on politicians' desks. And so long as we can keep that positive rallying call going and start to package things together, then I think we're in a good place.
Yes, sir. In the light blue shirt back there.
Thanks. Matt Baker, I'm representing the Stove Project in Dumfries. I was really interested to see that you specifically identified public art as being underdeveloped in the plan, and whether that actually means that you've got specific ideas for developing.
Actually, can I just finish in the previous answer? I just want to say something. We're arm's length from government. I've described it as arm's length but hands-on. And once you accept that in Scotland, that you are closer to government, then it's about building a very strong relationship. Public art, it's not anything that I particularly brought in. I mean, I've got quite a big background in being involved in public art projects at both a large scale and community scale, and almost kind of creating a movement for public art in the northeast of England. But there has been some really interesting work that has been done in Scotland, particularly around using public art in places and regeneration and helping communities define and look at themselves. Some of the work through the Inspiring Communities projects, some of the regeneration work, we've not necessarily been funding it, it's been happening through other sources. But I don't think Scotland has taken to public art as quite as ambitiously as it might have done. So we've gone for two areas that we're going to support public art. One is within the capital programme. We'll support a small number of ambitious public art projects, and there's not a specific figure against those at the moment, but projects of the scale of ambition of the Gretna Gateway project and the ancillary work around that would count within that. And we've also put in £250,000 for a more community-based public art programme. It's actually in the Access Audience Development Participation end, so it's about kind of engaging people. And it may well be that out of our place discussions with local authorities, that what we do with those is we say, what are the five or six things you really want to deliver on? And it may well be that public art emerges in some places as a priority, but not in others. I mean, I was in Aberdeenshire the other week, and the council's just made some quite significant cuts in its budget, and then we sat down and they told me they got £180,000 for public art, new money, through some planning gain thing. So we think by having a couple of streams there to work with, we can encourage more innovative public artwork, and temporary things as well as permanent.
That does sound very good. I mean, just where you're saying that you don't think Scotland's taken to public art, I wonder if perhaps Scotland hasn't taken to the kind of mega-scale public art that we see elsewhere, and there's maybe a reason for that it doesn't really suit this culture particularly, and yet maybe you're pushing forward with, you're saying we want to do these three mega-scale things. Are you sure that...
We're not pushing forward. We won't push anything in that sphere. Except I do think that gateways are really important, and gateways and borders are really important. And it's interesting, there's the piece of work going on at John O'Groats, actually. There's a bit of controversy about it, as there always is with public art, but it would be good if we could present a coherent package of ambition for public art in Scotland. Some of the work that has been done has been a little bit, what can I say? I'll get associated with particular projects, so I'm going to be careful here. It's been kind of functional or slightly off the shelf. We'd like to have some really inspiring public art. There's another really inspiring public art project emerging, St. Peter's in Cardross, where the cultural organisation MVA is looking to develop a whole sculpture park as part of the St. Peter's Seminary, and they're trying to buy the land there. That sort of project, which would have a long-term engagement with artists and put artists' residences in, is territory we're interested in.
Okay, can I go the third row back and the lady three along? Thank you.
Thanks very much. Jane Maitland, I'm a councillor and I'm from Easton Galloway, and I'm also on DG Arts director there. Venue, welcome. It's great to see you here. You say that you're going to take a particular interest in the south of Scotland, and I wonder if you would elaborate as to how you might do that. We're delighted to see you, and we hope very much to hear about a systematic involvement with this area.
Well, this is my third visit to Dumfries and Galloway, and I'm also taking responsibility for the borders area. And what I've done is I've first of all tried to understand the geography of the area, because like Andrew, I'm new to Scotland as well, and understand the rural tempo of the area. And I've been and met a number of people around Dumfries and Galloway. And the idea is, I think, that we look at what's here, we look at the ambitions of the people in the cultural sector, we also look at people outside the cultural sector who really want to engage, who have perhaps brushed with the cultural sector in the past. And then from that, we perhaps draft out a plan with some key players, bring that back to the region, discuss that, see what takes, what doesn't, see where new ideas can be added, come to roadshows like this, listen to what people have to say, and then come up with something that can kickstart some new activity. And some of that activity will be sustainable, not all of it, but that gets good buy-in, other people can join us, it will be sustainable. And I think that might work for Dumfries and Galloway. We might have a different approach in other areas of Scotland. In Perth and Kinross, particularly in Pitlochry, where they're really trying to major on cultural tourism, we have to work with that energy. So each area will have a different approach, and I think each director who's responsible for different parts of geography may well take a different approach. And in some areas, it might have to be a slightly harder-headed approach. But here, that seems to be working. And, you know, certainly I hope that you'll be at one of those meetings. Okay, there was a question down here at the front row, and then we'll come to the lady in the maroon jacket.
Morag Mugo, I'm an artist from Dumfries. I was recently at the second conference in Edinburgh of State of Play, which is about the future of Scotland's creative industries, really. And it was a very interesting forum for discussion and conversation. I wondered if you had any links at all with them, with that initiative.
This was the thing done by, was it by?
Sandy Moffat and
the university.
It was at on the mound.
It was at where, sorry?
On the mound in the National Gallery complex.
I think we had somebody there, but right. We weren't directly involved in it. I mean, our role in creative industries is very much to coordinate the efforts of the strategic bodies. There are creative industries conferences every other week, it seems, in Scotland. We're actually just recruiting somebody that will kind of head up our creative industry. But Caroline Parkinson, who's the third of our creative directors, leads on this area. And it's about trying to create the environment where businesses can grow. We have an issue that Scottish Enterprise has done actually quite a lot of support for the creative sector in different ways, but its focus at the moment is on larger scale businesses, you know, that have employ lots of people and have big turnovers. And the trouble is that the cultural sector is made up of lots of small enterprises and individual traders. And there's a danger that the creative industry sort of falls through the gaps. So we've got to try and advocate some sort of strategy that puts resources together from the likes of Scottish Enterprise. Highland and Island Enterprise are actually very good at this because they're used to working with rurality and small-scale things. We've got to try and get a plan together that partners people together. Universities will be key to that. And one of the things in the plan is a network of incubator spaces with universities. Now, those don't have to be physically located with the universities. They can be associated with and based in rural communities and other places. But we're early days in what comes forward. There is a document that went to the Scottish Government about a week before the election, but it didn't come out very publicly, which is a work in progress, the work we've done. But we're holding back on announcing too much on the creative industries until we've got a bit more to say.
Thank you.
Okay, the lady in the maroon jacket there.
My name is Bridie Ashrowan, and I'm on the board of Borders Arts Trust. So we've come from the Borders today, just a couple of us. And it's a voluntary group who are, in a way, trying to bring leaders together in the community to take forward the arts. Because what we spotted when we did a project was there wasn't a group that was bringing people together strategically. We have a fantastically supportive council who do really good projects in the arts, but we need independent organisations as well, especially to bring people together and to merge and work in partnership. We also have this project, this quite a lot of voluntary input, which is a film festival which ran last year, and already we've got interest from India and the Ukraine to run it again this year, as well as filmmakers in Scotland. But we face a choice. If you think about your comment, and which was, do we do the next month or the next year, 3 years, do we concentrate on the project? Do we concentrate on developing something that connects people together in Arts Trust? So I'm just curious about your first response to that, and to say, then come and see us in the Borders. But where would you put your energies? Project or strategic when you've got the absence of both?
Both. not knowing the detailed context, I wouldn't like to advise. You know, some places you just need projects. Projects are what things build from, and it's kind of energy behind those. And they wouldn't mind me saying, but I was in Aberdeen earlier in the week, and we've got some big issues with Aberdeen. You know, and a city the size of Aberdeen just doesn't have the independent cultural organisations, doesn't have the venues that it should have. And what it needs to get it going is some projects. It needs some projects and some passionate people and some people generating ideas. We can write strategies, but ultimately it needs some activity that excites people and builds. So, you know, in that situation, it's very much the project, but it may well be that it's a mixture of both with yourselves.
And it's so useful when there is a group that we can come and speak to, or a network that we can come and speak to. So perhaps I can get your card afterwards.
Well, things that have worked, you know, because we have got some money in a joint project in the Borders, Creative Industries, and there was the Our Inspiring Communities project in Cree Town and things. So when we've got a few kind of dots that you can join up, mm-hmm. it's helpful to have those to work towards a strategy.
Question at the back there. Yes, sir.
Hi, my name's Robert Carson, and I'm strong. Can I talk without that, please? Can you hear me? Yes.
Yeah, we are recording, actually.
Okay. My name's Robert Carson, and I'm starting a small opera company called Noise, which stands for New Opera in Scotland Events. And my question to you is Creative Scotland in any way going to challenge the sort of monopoly that seems to exist to a certain extent within Scotland about the funding of opera? Because if you're looking for places to find funding for opera, or indeed any music theatre that doesn't come under a theatre umbrella, which is one way that you can get around the problem, it's very difficult. And since I'm not complaining about the work of Scottish Opera, I think they do a really good job, but it's very difficult to tender for any of the money that they receive from the government. So I wondered whether it might be part of Creative Scotland's policy or remit, or did they have any intention to think about how our national companies are funded, or the companies that are funded directly?
Yeah, we don't have a direct influence over Scottish Opera and where the program. I would say that they, I think they do sensationally good work, and you know, per capita of population, Scotland gets more opera than the rest of the UK. But I don't think it's a monopoly. I mean, I went to see Visible Fictions, who had collaborated with Scottish Opera on Wednesday night in Glasgow, and it was an opera for 8-year-olds, 8 to 10-year-olds. It was a new project, new work, the collaboration between the two. I think they're very open to ideas. That they're 15-minute operas for new composers that they've done, you know, has huge potential to have satellites. And our budgets are open, our quality production budgets are open for business on the 1st of May.
Yeah. Okay.
I think it's about diversity of provision, isn't it? I mean, I'm not saying that they don't do a good job, but if you have an alternative vision to what they want to do and you don't necessarily want to work with them, then they wouldn't be the obvious people that you approach to collaborate with. I'm not saying that provision that Scotland gets isn't bad, but it's all one particular taste, it's one particular flavour, and we all have opinion about 15 minutes opera and the possibilities that are, you know, open with a 15-minute opera. I don't particularly myself think that it's a good idea, but there we go. But if you look at the situation in England, there are about 200 small independent opera companies of one sort or another operating within the country. But that's, you know, so it seems to me that there is a case to be made for funding being more open and more open to tender, more competitive, and being able to at least apply for it, whether one doesn't get it.
Yeah, I think that plurality of decision making, rather than the decision making all being in the hands of a single company or institution or organisation, is one of the things that devolving funds will help us to achieve. I'm painfully aware of time. Can I just say, who else has a question to ask? Okay, just if you raise your hands high, just because afterwards in the networking, then I can make sure that we make time to do that. Can I just thank you all for your questions? Thank you, Andrew, for being here. And we've got...